I'm Brian Myers.
I'm Mike Ritalik.
I'm Becky Haddad.
And this is Ow Pellets, a podcast featuring tips for ag teachers. We are your agricultural education resource across the web, sharing research-based tips and tackling the tough questions facing agriculture teachers every day.
Welcome to another episode of Ow Pellets Tips for Ag Teachers podcast. This is Brian. I am here with Becky and Mike, and we are here by the Ow Pellet. And I have a burning question for Becky. Becky, what was your favorite kind of music when you were growing up?
Okay, that's not a fair question, because when I was growing up, you just listened to whatever your parents listened to.
But I'm sure you look to me like you liked like grunge music, right? And that reminds me
of alternative. Yes, I definitely have that look. Someone who listened to a lot of grunge music, you know, on my Wisconsin dairy farm, just like, you know, me and the cows, grunge music. Hanging. It was a lot of She Thinks My Tractor's Sexy. Like Kenny Chesney was probably, was where it was at in the early 90s when I was growing up.
Those cows milk better with the grunge music.
Yeah. And I appreciate Mike doing that, because, you know, she's trying to make an old joke on us, Mike, all of a sudden, and we're just going to ignore that whole fact. Well, grunge makes
What were you listening to in the early 90s, Brian?
Alternative
music. Why is this where we're starting?
Alternative music, which makes me think of alternative certified teachers. And that's what we're going to be talking about today.
You are digging deep, man. Digging deep.
Kelly, help us out here. Thanks for being with us here today.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
We really need to make this a video podcast, because if you could see the look on Kelly's face as we got started, she's like, what the heck did I get myself into?
I mean, I knew what it was, but the fact that I came back for more, I don't know.
It is. We do. And so Kelly, for the folks out there that were not able to listen to that glorious podcast of past that you've done with us, why don't you go ahead and reintroduce yourself to our Ow Pellets audience?
All right. Excellent. So I'm Kelly Claflin. I'm currently an assistant professor of agroscience education at The Ohio State University, and taught high school and middle school agriculture in Wisconsin, and spent some time in Oregon and Virginia as well in ag ed roles.
So Kelly, give us a quick overview of the topic of our conversation today.
Yeah, so the research that I completed was a continuation on a few other studies on alternatively certified agriculture teachers, or really those that are non-traditional from what the profession may consider normal. You go and get a bachelor's or a master's in agricultural education, your degree might say agricultural education, and then you go into the classroom, where there's lots of other ways to enter the profession, because there's those teacher shortages that we know a lot about. And so this study looked at how alternatively certified teachers were learning how to be ag teachers, and especially kind of teachers broadly defined around a program. So not just how to teach, but how to manage an FFA chapter and supervise SAEs, because a lot of the conversations anecdotally that I was hearing and having in conversations, people were thinking about, well, these teachers are lacking something because they didn't come through a traditional ag ed program and learn about the three circle model and work-based learning and the career and tech ed piece. And like, we need to help them, which, I mean, we all need help in some way or the other, whether it's through professional development or, you know, our own personal growth.
I feel like she was looking right at Brian when she said that.
You don't know how your faces are arranged on my screen, but, you know, take that as you may. But thinking about, well, we have had alternatively certified teachers for decades. Like, some of the best teachers we know may have been alternatively certified. So how are they currently learning, and how can we supplement that and take kind of what's currently going on to make some recommendations and help support new teachers?
I think this is a great topic and a great conversation. And before we really dig into some of those things that we want to talk about related to these non-certified teachers, we collectively know the preparation that people have when they go through a teacher certification program. And, you know, it may vary slightly by state, but primarily it's all the same. But that's not necessarily the case for non-certified teachers. So tell us a little bit about who that population are and who's coming to us from other places when it comes to teaching agriculture?
Yeah, so that terminology to start with, whether it's alternative or non-certified, like none of those terms work. You know, some states might have provisional licenses. You might hear lateral entry teachers that are coming from industry. And so a lot of our terminology is state specific, and none of it fully encompasses the diverse folks and their experiences that they're bringing with them to their classroom. So in my study, I talked to 12 teachers from across the United States with varying years of teaching experience, from their first year teaching to like year 27, like counting down the years to retirement. And so it was really hard to define. And so I use alternatively certified or alternative certification just because it's kind of a well-known umbrella term, but really doesn't get at who those folks are. So in the study that we're talking about, we had some teachers that were provisionally certified after going through a teacher preparation program, but due to licensure tests or portfolios or GPA was sometimes an issue. There was some holdup at the end, not because they didn't want to be a teacher, not complete that program, but there was some kind of hoop that they weren't making it through. So they had the knowledge and the experience, and sometimes even student teaching, that license just looked different and may have required different things. We also have folks that are coming from other educational subjects. So they've gone through teacher preparation. They may have years of teaching experience, but CTE or agricultural education is new. But they have that education piece. So it's not like they've never taught before. Then we have folks coming in from industry, which historically, if we go back to 1917 and how Smith Hughes was written, really, ag ed and family consumer ed or homemaking were the only ones that didn't just go like, you just need industry experience. Like, we should maybe have bachelor's programs for these folks. So for a lot of other CTE areas, alternative certification is the norm. Ag ed, it's not. You know, depending on state, it's different. But all the folks that I've talked to that have been certified in a non-traditional format or matter do so because either that's the way they get their license to jump through the hoops within the state that they're at, but also because they love students and they want to help them. They want to help them grow and develop and become leaders in their community, and they want to teach them about agriculture. Nobody I've talked to in this study or outside or anecdotally say like, oh, like I just need a job. I guess I'm going to teach ag and like it's just going to be a breeze. No, like they know that they want to make an impact on students. And I think that's really important for us to remember.
Even thinking about that variety of people, like in 2 minutes, the variety you cover of, you know, of intentions, of where they come from in these backgrounds, I think you said right off the bat, we're not talking about just this group of 22-year-olds that we know what their experience and training has been. And so when you think about the different touch points they have in terms of support, how do we show value for those different types of experiences? For folks in support roles, how do we account for that variety of experience that you've outlined?
Yeah, so I think one thing that is, as we have conversations, whether it's within teacher organizations or state staff or teacher educators or just, you know, teachers huddled around the coffee pot at a contest or, you know, conference, is to recognize that everybody has something to bring. And if we kind of take out this idea of there's limitations to state licensure policy that we can't immediately snap our fingers and change. There's things that we need to follow at the university level to have a curriculum that can be improved and a number of credits and location. And so if we kind of ignore all those hurdles and think about there's folks that want to teach, and 99% of the time they're doing what they can and above and beyond to make sure they're good teachers. And so recognizing that experience and getting to know folks. I think a lot of folks that are coming in that are maybe a little bit older than 22 years old have some life experiences that makes that transition a little bit easier. I think we also, you know, I don't have data to support this besides anecdotal, but a lot of folks get hired near home. And so it may be their hometown school that they're really devoted to. And so they have community support maybe already, or family support, or that they know people within ag ed. So I think before we just go like, I don't even know this person, like they didn't come through a teacher prep program, like I've never heard of them before, thinking of getting to know them and what experiences that they bring, especially with industry, which is something that, you know, varies with our current pre-service teacher population before we make assumptions and what they may need or what they may know, et cetera.
As you were talking, the thing that really struck me in terms of the advantages that they have that, you know, our traditionally certified 22-year-old might not, the thing that I hadn't really thought of before was just this, they understand the world of work, which I haven't thought of it in those terms, but for somebody to come in who has worked another job and who has kind of worked through this, like, working is hard. The jobs are hard. They probably come to teaching with a little bit different attitude about what they can want to expect from the world of work.
Yeah, well, and they're choosing to do it with some prior knowledge of, like, you know, maybe it's, you know, somebody told them they should be a teacher and, like, it's taken a few job changes to get them to that part, or like a opening or somebody recommending it at the right time. But they're like, yeah, these other things have not worked. Actually, education's where I'm at, or like, no, I'm going to choose this. And folks that have families and rich lives, and not to say that our graduates don't, and that we don't have non-traditional age students in our pre-service teacher ed programs, but I think there's some rich experiences that alternatively certified teachers bring to our program that haven't been fully recognized, maybe, because we think about all the things that we can't change with licensure and policies, et cetera.
Well, I really appreciate how you started the conversation talking about our language is important here. One thing that we've been bantering around here is trying to use the terminology of pathways to teaching. Because here in Florida, we counted up at least 6 different ways that we as a university can engage with somebody to help get them the licensure they need to become a teacher. And so which one's traditional, which one's not traditional, I don't know. There's at least six of them come through there. The other thing that we're facing that I think we're going to see more and more across the country is our legislature is getting ready to go into session. And one of the things that came out by one of the leaders of the Senate was her push to, as the president of the Senate, to deregulate education. That's her words, deregulate education. We don't know exactly what that means, but part of that we think is going to be how people become licensed and certified to teach in the state. And we, as teacher educators, have to figure out what we're going to do to stay relevant, because right now people kind of have to go through us. But then also as a larger ag ed community, what are we going to be doing to support everybody, that regardless of their pathway on how they got here, to be part of the solution? Because I think we're seeing people come and go from this profession, you know, more like a normal profession, that out to do those sort of things. So with all of that happening, I don't know, what are your thoughts, and what did you find to really help these folks that came in through this other pathway to be successful? How do we help replicate that?
Yeah, well, I think where the frustration probably lies is not in the people, it's the legislation and it's the policies that are so inflexible, or like we have to like navigate around. That's where I think the deficit language and the frustration is from. So in talking to the teachers in my study, some of them had prior preparation. Some of them were just kind of thrown into the classroom. And, you know, one teacher talked about, I was given the keys and said, hey, like, go do a good job. Like, there's a greenhouse. Good luck. And not that administration wasn't supportive. And it really depends on the state or, you know, educational service area or district or whatever you call that group in your state that may provide support. You know, some of the participants were enrolled in college courses. Some were part of an alternative certification licensure program. Some were not. So they were balancing a lot and trying to learn. And they were really learning by doing a lot at the time. And it's not just teaching, but it's how does a school district work? And where do I send in my FFA membership? And what are these forms for that to fill out? What's a, you know, what's Perkins? What's, you know, a concentrator? All the lingo, etc. And so recognizing that, again, they are doing it for the kids, what helped them through that is somebody connecting with them. So a neighbor teacher down the road, maybe somebody that they knew that said, hey, talk to this teacher. Sometimes it was folks in the community or alumni, somebody to help them say, like, okay, here's who you should talk to, or, you know, I'm a reference. So in thinking about mentoring, and, you know, I know you all have been having conversations about mentoring, it's not just waiting for some formal thing, but just reaching out. And again, that goes for any new teacher. I looked at how they were learning to be teachers as part of a community. And so if you don't know that community exists, or if you don't have kind of a key to the community, it's really hard. And that's one of the reasons I think so many of us love AGED is because of that community. But we also, we know the lingo and we know kind of the things that we value, like, you know, the owl is a symbol of knowledge and wisdom. And, you know, there's a reason why it's owl pellets, right? There's some meaning towards it. Well, if you don't know any of that, and not saying that all, you know, non-traditionally certified teachers do, but some of them don't have any school-based AGED background. Some have a ton. And so, you know, having somebody to introduce them into the group, introducing them to new teachers around the area, introducing them to state staff or those people that are supporting AG teachers in the state, because sometimes a school hires an AG teacher alternatively and nobody knows, right? You have to like go search them out to try to help them. So yeah, I think getting to then know that lingo and terms within the state and within AGED, but also just not assuming that they don't know anything or that they don't care, because that's not helpful to anybody.
In our house, we talk about how hard it is to become unoblivious, and not to imply that that teachers are, but I think it emphasizes that importance that you talked about of someone else doing that connecting. And I think so often it's really easy as somebody who is in the conversation or somebody who's been involved to say, just ask. Just, well, okay, but I don't know what I need. Like, I don't know what I need to ask for. I don't know what you can offer. So in terms of, you know, helping people be that someone to help connect, what are some things that, you know, that connector could ask about, or what are some ways they could start that conversation with that new team, whether new or, you know, however they're new? How do we encourage starting that conversation?
Yeah, I think it's an email or a phone call, or, you know, stopping by or encouraging them to come visit your school and just letting them know you're a resource. But also part of it is, like, if you're at events, literally introduce them to people. And you almost need to sponsor a new teacher, right? And a lot of times our cooperating teachers are doing that, or former AG teachers, for those teachers that have been part of school-based AGED. But you have to be like, hey, this is a great teacher. Like, you all need to get to know this person and they need to get to know you. Those actions. Like, I remember talking to new teachers and one of my friends that was alternatively certified, and she had texted and said, what do I wear to this? Like, is it super professional? Is it business casual? Can I wear jeans? You know, letting them know to ask that, or say like, hey, you know, normally you drop kids off here. Like, teachers have their own lounge. Like, what are the things that may not be explicit in what we do, whether it's through like AG teachers conferences or professional development, FFA things? What are they expected to do that nobody, like saying like, if you don't do this, we're probably going to judge you, but we do judge you if you don't do this. So coming to professional development or summer conferences and things like that, kind of giving a lay of the land. One of the participants in the site talked about being a young pup as a teacher, and a new teacher or a veteran teacher at state convention said, hey, you're going to help come judge this, and I'm going to tell you, you know, what the expectations are to be an AG teacher at convention. And that's really helpful, right? And so I think there's that. On the other side, the recommendations is, if you're a new teacher, especially if you're not traditionally certified and you may be new to AGED, don't be afraid to get involved, which I'm afraid of almost everything. So, like, I get it if you're like, it's nerve-wracking going to a new place where you might not know anybody. One of our teachers in the study talked about, like, the first year she went to an event, she's like, I looked around and I didn't know anybody. I didn't know what to do. And the next year, somebody had saved her a seat, right? Like, it takes a little bit. But observing is just as powerful as learning as professional development or other things to kind of figure out what's going on. But if you're not going to those things, which one you need to know about to go to, that's going to limit some of your learning and making those connections as well.
Kelly, this has been fantastic. And so as we kind of wrap this up as a summary, you know, if you can talk to state leaders, these are state FFA advisors, state supervisors, university, what's one or two things that you think needs to be on top of the state leaders' minds from your study to make sure that we are welcoming to individuals from all pathways to teaching?
Yeah. So I think one is to not let the policies and the things that we can't control hold us back totally. I think a whole nother conversation has to be, how do we advocate to like make that better? But I really like the frame of mind of like, what's currently going on and how can we build off of that? And so recognizing that, you know, we don't have a homogenous group. We can't assume people's backgrounds and we can't assume that they're not learning or caring just because we don't see them, you know, oftentimes to get licensed, they have to complete programming and classes and, you know, get support and that they want to be there. So I think it's, you know, the assumptions, but encouraging mentoring programs in general. And I think there's a fine line when I've had conversations with state staff and lots of places is, do you do something separate for the others or do you include them in? And I think there's, you know, it depends. So like some of our traditionally certified teachers can use the same knowledge, you know, if they hadn't been through school-based ag ed as a student or, you know, like we never not benefit from information. I think, you know, recognize that that community and getting them connected is going to make a huge difference than always just like putting them in their own corner too, I guess.
That's fantastic. Great, great way and great thoughts for us to wrap up this conversation. Kelly, we really do appreciate you coming and having a conversation with us again. You're doing great work there at The Ohio State University. Keep those Buckeyes going. We appreciate you and your entire team. And we hope that folks go out and look at this piece of work that you've done, the other conversations, and engage on social media. Share with us some of your stories. What did you find to be helpful as you were beginning, regardless of your type of your pathway to teaching and your journey? And so for Becky and Mike, this is Brian. We are here by the Owl Pellet. We hope you had a phenomenal day and look forward to interacting with you on all of our social media sites.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Owl Pellets. Check out our website for more information on this topic and to learn more about our guests. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram to stay connected. And be sure to subscribe to our podcast so you'll never miss an episode. For Mike and Becky, this is Brian here by the Owl Pellets saying thank you, and we look forward to seeing you again on another episode of Owl Pellets, Tips for Ag Teachers.